show proof of citizenship when they register to vote, can only vote in federal races, not state races. There were 100,000 ballots that were at issue in terms of people who the state claimed did not have this proof of citizenship, but the Arizona Supreme Court said that they actually can cast both federal and state ballots. And the interesting thing is, these voters who supposedly lacked proof of citizenship, they were disproportionately likely to be Republicans. So it just goes to show you that when you try to suppress the voting rights, and they're trying to suppress the voting rights of Democrats and voters of color, there can also be collateral damage that hurts Republicans as well.
And finally, go back to Georgia, where we began, and the overall significance of this for the federal election.
What's happening in Georgia is incredibly disturbing, because the MAGA-aligned election board, really at the 11th hour, is passing not one, not two, but three or more rule changes that could lead Republican county boards not to certify the election if a Democrat wins. That could plunge the state into chaos. Trump could then weaponize that disinformation. There's a lot of unpredictable outcomes there. That could also delay the counting of votes, which could send the election to the House. So right now we're just witnessing all of these really disturbing efforts very late in the game to try to manipulate the Democratic process to Republicans' benefits. And they're basically using all the tools they have to essentially rerun the 2020 playbook to try to steal the election. But this time they're running it before the election.
Ari Berman, I want to thank you for being with us, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine. We'll link to your articles. Happy belated birthday to Jackie Sam. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Yes, you are continuing to listen to your community radio station, KBOO FM in Portland, 90.7, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis. Via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, the 23rd of September. It is 8:02 a.m. And I am Cecil Prescott, and thank you for joining in and listening to this radio program. It is a pleasure and something I am grateful for, the opportunity to spend some time with those of you who are in the community, who are interested in hearing, building community, and discovering ways in which we can not only get good information, but be able to find ways to connect with one another and, I hope, to work to build a better world. And there is so much that's going on today, and I know you have so many thoughts and so many concerns to share. Let me remind you that our phone numbers here to speak to everyone is 503-231-8187, and we invite you to call in at that number and to share some of your thoughts on the topics or the views that you hear this morning on this radio program. Again, I'm Cecil Prescott, and I am your host this morning on the 23rd of September. And I would be remiss in my duty if I did not acknowledge that we are officially in the autumn season. So, goodbye, summer. It was a pleasure to be with you for a little while, and I know you have to journey on, but the memories will remain with me, and I'll look forward to getting together with you in 9 months or so. In the meantime, thank you all for all that you are doing. There had so much has happened over the summer. And one thing I wanted to share about is as we enter into fall and as we are entering into the middle of the election season, in the U.S. elections will be held on November 5th. So that's, you know, a little bit more than a month away, and there is so much to do and so much to learn about. If you tune into this station just before this program here, you might have heard a short spot talking about the daily program here on KBOO running on air. It's an opportunity for listeners to hear the candidates running in for various offices and various districts in the city of Portland, city council and mayoral candidates. You can go onto our website to listen to episodes and to become to get to know the candidates that are running in your districts and running throughout the city of Portland. It's a service that is very helpful for all of us because, as you are well aware, we are entering, for those in Portland, entering into a new, different cycle of not only campaigning, but we are creating a new city government. It's something that is... it's something we are trying for the first time. So for the first time in decades, after much attempts to start and stop, Portland finally revised its governing structure so that the city council is expanded. We will have district with the city divided into district, with each district being represented by three councilors. In addition to the revision of the city council structure, there's also a revision in the way we will elect city council members. And this is new, and I suppose it will take a while for us to get used to this new system. Those of you who are looking at Portland from outside and said this does not impact me, well, maybe it will. For instance, while Portland City Council will have this new way of electing representatives this year, Multnomah County will have a similar type of election in 2025. So it's an attempt to I don't want to put words into those who created this new system, but I imagine it's an attempt to make democracy more democratic, certainly in terms of district representation, in terms of candidates not having to run citywide, but to run in district is an attempt to make sure that all voices are heard and have access to power and ways in which to be heard in City Hall. In addition, City Council representatives will no longer be managers of city bureaus. We will have a city administrator, and so they can perform the duties, the sole duties of being representatives and passing legislation. All certainly new and certainly things that are different. So that's what's happening locally in where I'm at and where many of you are at. A new way of seeing things, a new way of creating city government, a new way of envisioning how we can represent and be represented. And so that's happening on the local scene. Nationally, certainly all of you are aware of the presidential election and not only on this station, but certainly in many stations and blogs and social media outlets, you have heard very much about the elections. I wanted to mention one phenomenon that came across last week, and I wanted to hear perhaps some responses to this decision by some people made. You may be familiar during the Democratic campaign, and this is during the primary election cycle in this spring, and this is before it began before President Biden dropped out of the election. There was a movement among delegates in different states to pledge not for the president, but to stand as uncommitted delegates. This was a national movement that was meant to try to force the Democratic nominee, President Biden, and subsequently Vice President Harris, who became the Democratic nominee, to urge them to take a more committed stance in support of Palestinians who are suffering during the bombing in Gaza. This uncommitted movement gained a lot of momentum and a lot of press and a lot of talk from people. And so it was an attempt to force the Democratic ticket to be more responsive. Well, that did not happen. The Vice President Harris did not change the her stance in terms of Palestine, and so those who were uncommitted released a statement last Thursday about the next steps, and I will read it to you. It's about maybe 10 paragraphs, but I think it's important to read. And I would like other people, particularly those of you who are uncommitted, who are have decided that the major party candidates are not people you can support, I would like to hear your responses to the uncommitted national movement, their decision moving forward, and whether or not you think it is something that is suitable or not. Here's the statement. The Uncommitted National Movement was born out of historic anti-war organizing by people across our country witnessing a genocide unfold in Gaza against Palestinians whose humanity we recognize as no different than our own. We came together first in Michigan and then in state after state to insist that even through our pain and grief, we must organize to save lives, advance policies that build rather than destroy, and create a future where not another bomb from our country drops on a civilian anywhere in our world. We are proud to have grown our movement, even as our government continues to send bombs that destroys families. Our organizing around the presidential election was never about endorsing a specific candidate. It has always been about building a movement that saves lives. Today, the Uncommitted National Movement announces that as we continue advocating for life-saving policy change, which that the bombing of Gaza and ends U.S. support for the U.S. for the Israeli military war crimes, Vice President Harris' unwillingness to shift on unconditional weapon policy or to even make a clear campaign statement in support of upholding existing U.S. and international human rights law has made it impossible for us to endorse her. At this time, our movement, 1, cannot endorse Vice President Harris, 2, opposes a Donald Trump presidency, whose agenda includes plans to accelerate the killing in Gaza while intensifying the suppression of anti-war organizing, and 3, is not recommending a third-party vote in the presidential election, especially as third-party votes in key swing states could help inadvertently deliver a Trump presidency given our country's broken electoral college system. Pause. The statement continues. For months, we have urged Vice President Harris to shift her Gaza policy so that we could mobilize voters in key states to save lives and our democracy. The DNC and the Vice President's campaign fumbled even a small gesture to unite our party ahead of November by rejecting the simple request for a Palestinian-American speaker. Now the Vice President campaign is courting Dick Cheney while sidelining disillusioned anti-war voices, pushing them to consider third-party options or to sit this important election out. The Uncommitted movement began in Michigan with 1.5 million voter contacts in 3 weeks, delivering 101,000 anti-war votes, and was one of the first organized efforts to spotlight Biden's electability issues. Nationally, we grew to 740,000 pro-peace voters, securing a historic 30 delegates to the DNC. Since then, we've expanded to over 300 ceasefire delegates, Harris supporters who have joined our fights to end Democratic Party leadership policy of backing bombs. Their efforts have been supported by our Not Another Bomb campaign, which brought together dozens of organizations and mobilized over 100,000 people in 35 states nationwide. In our assessment, our movement best hope for change lies in growing our anti-war organizing power, and that power will be severely undermined by a Trump administration. 77% of Democrats and 61% of Americans oppose weapons aid for Israel assault on Gaza, which is preventing a ceasefire and blocking the reunification of Palestinian and Israeli captives with their families. Trump himself has bragged about accelerating the genocide against Palestinians and promised to intensify the suppression of pro-Palestinian activism in the U.S. We must block Donald Trump, which is why we urge uncommitted voters to vote against him and avoid third-party candidates that could inadvertently boost his chance, as Trump openly boasts that third parties will help his candidacy. We urge uncommitted voters to register anti-Trump votes and vote up and down the ballot. Our focus remains on building a broad anti-war coalition, both inside and outside the Democratic Party. Pro-war forces like AIPAC may want to drive us out of the Democratic Party, but we're here to stay. Movement have long worked to rid the Democratic Party of hateful forces, segregationists, anti-union, anti-choice, and anti-LGBTQ proponents, the NRA and Big Oil, and we will work in that legacy to rid our party of AIPAC's pro-war extremism. Finally, building on the work of Uncommitted, we invite stakeholders to the Democratic Party Coalition, progressive civil rights, labor, racial justice, reproductive rights, climate, immigrant rights, disability justice, people of faith, young people, and more to join us in our campaign to push our Democratic Party to align with the majority of Democratic voters who support the urgent call to stop for a stop to illegal and morally reprehensible weapons transfers through our campaign, Not Another Bomb, both now and in the next administration. That, my friends, was the letter, the statement from the Uncommitted National Movement, a movement, anti-war movement that began in Michigan, gained support among many people. And I share that because of what they urge and want some feedback, and I'll go to a caller in a second. One is they explicitly said that they did not endorse Vice President Harris, number one. Two, they said they oppose a Donald Trump presidency. And three, is not recommending a third-party vote in the presidential election, especially, I'm quoting here, especially as third-party votes in key swing states could help inadvertently deliver a Trump presidency given our country broken electoral college system. So, where do they go from here? Where do we go from here? I think it's somewhat subtle, somewhat sophisticated in their analysis, but let's hear what you have to say. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And to our caller who has been very, very patient, let's hear what Santiago has to say. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I think where we really go from here as Uncommitted is we really need to start building building class consciousness. I mean, essentially what's going on right now, here's the thing, like, I agree with basically a lot of what Uncommitted is saying, because it's a lot of stuff that people on the left have been saying. I mean, the wide swath of the electorate basically is saying wholeheartedly that they're not voting for Kamala because she is some great, amazing president. They were voting for her simply because she wasn't Biden and she wasn't Trump. And I feel like Kamala Harris has basically been scared to the middle. You know, even her tepid attempts at requesting a ceasefire, which would have just been like a temporary ceasing of hostilities while hostages could be transferred over, but then the slaughter, the genocide would resume.
Continue.
I mean, it wasn't any different than the flaccid messaging behind Biden's campaign.
Right.
So, I mean, essentially, for lack of a better term, she's Black Biden right now. In a race where she is supposed to be the clear winner, the fact that she's only within, like, 1 or 2 points like ahead of Trump in some places. That's like that's ridiculous for them to continue to say that she's the clear choice. And here's the other thing that I'll say, and one thing that I really don't feel like the uncommitted really gets into, and because, you know, a lot of liberals will say, well, we're voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, the thing is, we need to name those evils, because you can't exercise the demons if you don't call them by their name.
So I want to hold on to it. I think that's a very important point you just said. So I just want to take that in. You have to call them out and name them. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Trump's party, the Republican Party, is the white fascist party, the white nationalist, white Christian nationalist fascist party, okay? But the liberals right now under Biden, much earlier, even under Obama,
yes,
they're an intersectional imperialist. They're intersectional imperialists.
Right.
It's the same old imperialist policy that has brought so much disaster to the country, but now it's because it's catering to Latinos and to black folks, that all of a sudden, oh, and to queer folks. Now everybody in the rainbow spectrum can be in on disenfranchising the third world, right? Like,
yes.
As one of my friends say, they call it I have to think of a name for the Latinos, but he calls it the black brunch, the black excellence brunch crowd.
Okay.
Is what he calls it, you know? And but is that, you know, Kamala is not the choice. And I mean, you know, I'll concede. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, because it sounds as if you're saying that clearly the vice president is not like the candidate that we would that we would want. And I think you're accurate that she's very much, you know, very mainstream, you know, in the center of Democratic Party, you know, part of the imperialism class. But it sounds as if what they're saying is that the way to continue the struggle is not to go like third party, but to hold your nose and vote for her and work within the Democratic Party. Is that like going for reform as opposed to radical change?
There's got to be some reform, but the thing is like, you, I tell everybody, you got to think of it like a dress, right? There's only so many times you can alter the dress before you have to get a new dress. And here's the thing, like, even Keynesian, the Keynesian reformers of the New Deal era were considered, and while they were staunchly capitalist, much like the social democracies of Western Europe that, you know, that a lot of progressives talk about, they were staunchly capitalist, even though they call themselves social democracies.
Right.
The thing is that they're still liberal, big L liberals, as in, like,
right,
liberalism meaning like
economy.
The market can solve everything.
Right.
So let's marketize housing, politics, whatever. So they're still staunchly capitalist, staunchly liberalist, but they believe that it can all be reined in as long as you have state intervention. But the problem is that they're not removing the power.
Okay.
And that's where they keep messing up. So I mean, it's like the uncommitted has a decent analysis. They have an okay analysis, but what I'll say is that, you know, the reason what we really need is I don't really care for the idea of third parties necessarily, because you're still acquiescing to the system to an extent.
Yes.
But the most successful movements have been outside the political system.
Right.
I'm talking like the Black Panthers. I'm talking STAR. I'm talking La Raza Unida, Brown Berets, Mecha, AIM. You know, all of these cultural resistance movements that basically understood that the plight of the working class in America is the same as the plight of the is on the same footing as the working class plight of everywhere else in the world, and that when we vote for Kamala against the white fascists without recognizing that we're still voting for an intersectional imperialist, we're leaving ourselves open to still continuing to oppress the working class of every other country that we have common cause with. And that's how the Vietnam War was brought down on the American front, because mm-hmm. there was so much leftist organizing that it imploded on itself, and it was already losing, but the whole point of it wasn't to win. The whole point of it was to send a message to anyone who would dare rise up against Western imperialist sanctions.
Yeah.
People in Vietnam right now are still being born to this day with deformities due to Agent Orange. I mean, it wasn't really, there wasn't a battle to be won. It was sending a message. It was brutal. It was to brutalize people for, it was to brutalize the Vietnamese people for essentially, like, saying, no, we don't want the French in here, we don't want the Japanese
Certainly.
In here, we don't want the Americans in here.
Hey, we have a call of behind you, but I appreciate the way your analysis and your thought. So it's
can
helpful.
I toss in one more thing?
Yeah,
real quick?
Go ahead.
And the last thing that I want to say is that, you know, when the uncommitted talks about immoral, I think we have to understand that the moral compass of the rich and the moral compass of the working class are completely different. When the golden rule of the working class is treat your neighbors as your own family, the golden rule of the rich is whoever has the gold makes the rules. So when we
Thank
talk
you.
About immorality, we have to understand whose moral compass we're being guided by, and we cannot expect those who have money to engage with our communities with the same moral compass because they don't have it.
Thank you so much. Thank mm-hmm. you for your thoughts. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We just heard from caller Santiago, who gave his analysis and his perspective on the uncommitted movement statement regarding the presidential election. And we have April, who's been waiting to speak next. Good morning, April.
Good morning. So thank you, first of all, for reading the whole statement from the Uncommitted Movement. Mm-hmm. I am a lifelong registered Democrat, although the last few elections I voted for a third party.
Uh-huh.
And this may be the first election when I vote the rest of my ballot but do not vote for president. I would never vote for Trump, and I think since Kamala's declared and got a whole bunch of support and said some good things, she's moved a lot, and I do not think that she is a good candidate for president. However, I have never thought that the president is the be-all or end-all of political, of what controls our politics. I think it's us out in the street, and I think it's the movements we build, and that doesn't have a whole lot to do with who's president. I mean, who's president has something to do with it, but not that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Santiago that we need to work on building organizations, and I loved his definition of the difference between the moral compasses.
Yes.
Of the working class and the moneyed class. So I haven't made up my mind yet,
well,
but this may be the first time I don't vote for president.
So let me ask you, if you don't mind, to talk mm-hmm. a little bit more about that. that internal debate you're having about whether to vote for president. It sounds as if you seem clear that you don't want Trump to be president. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you don't think that, I forgot how you described Vice President Harris. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I was really disgusted with Biden and his support for Israel and genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Kamala became the candidate, I thought, great, I'll vote for Kamala. But she said a lot of things that made her seem more radical than she is, and she has been distancing herself from those things ever since.
What about,
which I think is a very, very bad quality in president, and I don't think president is that important anyhow.
Okay. I would love to talk more about you, but there's some callers behind, and I want maybe, if they have patience, I'll just ask you one more question, April.
Sure.
In terms of if do you think that if Mr. Trump is elected, that things would be, how would things change?
I think things would be horrible. I think they would be even more repressive than they are now.
If Vice President Harris is elected, what do you think will happen compared to a Trump presidency?
Some of the same things.
Okay.
I can't say it would be that much better. And the one thing...
So there's a moral equivalency? Is there a moral equivalency between the between a Harris presidency and a Trump presidency?
They're both corporatists.
Okay. All right. And a couple of more questions. Which state do you live in?
Oregon.
And
yeah, actually, I've been a lifelong Portlander, and I just had to move out to Multnomah County because Portland doesn't have any affordable housing.
Right. Okay.
And I spent 11 years waiting.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, call again another time, April. I would appreciate hearing more. And thank you for your thoughts.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil, and I began this morning by reading a statement from the Uncommitted National Movement. Democrats who oppose the Democratic nominee, they wanted to urge them to speak more deliberately and prophetically on about Gaza. Let's hear what you have to say. Let's go to Francis, I believe, who's next. Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
How are you today?
Hello. I'm good. I am, as I understand it, those of us who voted uncommitted in the primary did so because it wouldn't affect the general election, mm-hmm. and that it would send a message that we are opposed to the genocide going on in Palestine. I listened to a representative from the Uncommitted Movement, and they explained their position a little further.
Okay.
And they said when they say they're not endorsing Kamala, they're not going to commit any of their resources, organizational resources, or all the things that they've done so far to organize themselves to her campaign. Mm-hmm. They're just not, that's how they're not endorsing her. And they're strongly opposed to Trump being president. To me, knowing that freedoms that have been taken away, women's reproductive rights and the voting rights, Restoring those are reason enough to vote for Kamala, and that we need to still encourage and organize to oppose the genocide. But there's no question to me, if women want their rights restored, they do not want Trump to be president.
So
if voting And if voting rights are going to be restored to where all this gerrymandering and such can not happen, then we need to vote for Harris. That's very clear to me.
Let me ask you, yeah. Because I appreciate your analysis, and I think what you've done is expanded the conversation. I began by talking about Gaza, and a couple of callers before you talked about their frustration. And you also acknowledged that, but you expanded that it's not only about Palestine, it's not only about Gaza, but there are other issues that we need to address. And you mentioned voting rights and reproductive choice, and those are things that are separating the major party candidates. And you think those are things that are important to consider as well.
They're not minuscule issues. Right. To me, they're not at all. They're very, very, very important issues. They're about our freedom. And it's kind of disheartening that they are kind of being held hostage to this genocide going on, that to ignoring it, basically, and going ahead and voting for the rights here and not recognizing what's going on over there. I don't really appreciate that at all. But I think that the only opportunity we will have to further this discussion about genocide and the war is if Kamala Harris is president. It won't happen if Trump is president. It won't happen at all.
Right.
The choice is very clear to me.
Okay.
Well, something I wanted to ask you about, though. My brother, he's on the East Coast, and he texted early this morning because he gets his news early,
mm-hmm.
that in Montana, the electronic absentee ballots went out without Harris's name on them. And I'm researching to find out if that's exactly true and how in the world that would happen. But apparently they had to stop the system. Because they have to fix that. But how in the world,
yeah,
could a state government allow that ballot to go out without her name on it? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes sense to me in terms of there's a lot that's going on to, I believe, undermine the elections this year. Yes, and if you had heard a little bit, I think it was on Democracy Now! Earlier, about what's going on in was it Georgia, where they want to hand count each ballot. You know what that's.
So they may not be able to certify the vote.
Certify election. So, and that's
but,
not.
But in that case.
And that's that not case, even talking about all the other situations that are happening in other states that are run by Republicans.
Okay, in the Montana case, that's state officials who should be investigated. The Georgia case. If they decide not to certify their ballots in time for the Electoral College count,
mm-hmm.
that to me that means, and I believe it's true, the way it's written in the 12th Amendment, it's the majority of the votes cast. So if they decide not to send their votes to be cast and vote counted, then that means the amount needed to win is lowered also,
so
because theirs aren't there.
So you know this conversation that you and I are having, I think, is representative of, and I think of a sense in this nation to undermine the electoral trust in the electoral system. And the fact that we have so many different rules and so many different ways, it will create doubt And I think that aids not the forces for democracy, but the forces for oppression and fascism.
And if you look at who's leading the charge and the undermining, then it's not a question on who to vote for.
All right. Well, thank you so much for spending some time and sharing your process. And I appreciate your thoughts. And
you too. I appreciate you a lot.
Well, thank you, Frances. Have a great day. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil. Just had a conversation with Frances, who explained their reason why they thought it's important to vote for one of the major parties' candidate as opposed to the other major party's candidate. And all of this, our conversation began this morning reflecting on the statement of the Uncommitted National Movement of Democrats who decided not to endorse Vice President Harris. They are also do not want Donald Trump elected, and they are not recommending a third party vote in presidential election, and I'm quoting here, especially as third party votes in key swing states could help inadvertently deliver a Trump presidency given our country broken electoral college system. So, as one caller mentioned, I think it was April, they are not going to commit their time and resources for Vice President Harris, but it seems as if they don't want you to vote for Trump. They don't want you to vote for a third party. Maybe vote for Harris anyway. Let's hear what our next caller has to say. Mark, good morning. Thank you for waiting. Mark, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Great. Yeah, so interesting conversations. Especially appreciate Santiago's comments. And he brought up a few things that were important. And this was regarding the Keynesian economics methods. And there's one thing that, you know, we failed to recognize, and that is what is the cause of this collusion of military industrial complex and our government? So if we understand the underpinnings, which is the economic system, which is the fiat system, then we can start actually naming these demons and recognizing them for what they are and how they contribute to the malaise of this society. I hope that people become a little more educated in this field, because it is so important to understand why our society is the way it is. And it has all to do with the monetary system that we use. And, you know, we're at an intersection in time where, if you're paying attention, you're looking at institutions like BlackRock, VanEck, Fidelity, investing billions of dollars into purchasing Bitcoin. The population in general needs to be aware of what's going on, what it is that's happening, and why they should own some Bitcoin. Because our time and energy and effort is being, we're being basically ripped off. You know, inflation is not something that is necessary. That 2% inflation is just 2% theft on our time and labor and effort. The more I've called several times about this, but it's just it doesn't click in quite yet. You know, it didn't for me for a long time, and I'm not an economics educated individual. I just happened to stumble on this because of advice. Somebody told me, look, pay attention to this.
So help us understand. You stated that it didn't click for you immediately. Help us understand.
Yes. So the reason it didn't click is because I saw this new system, this new monetary system that is inclusive. So anybody can participate in it, regardless of the price. There's no intermediaries, and the intermediary in this case in our financial system is the banks, and everybody else, like, you know, we're waiting on Jerome Powell for adjustments on interest rates, and there's a third-party intermediary when it comes to monetary issues in our society. With okay, this system, okay, there isn't.
All right.
Anybody can participate.
So is there, because all of us hear and receive information differently, is there a source, a book, a website, information that you could direct
people to? I would suggest anybody to study hope.com, HOPE.com. And this is organized by MicroStrategy. And they put in all the information that you need. They do extra. They educate you on all fronts on what it is that we're going through on our economic system right now, and how we can not feed the beast anymore.
Okay.
The beast is being fed by fiat. It is fed by money that does not that did not incur effort to produce.
All
when
right.
You can produce money out of thin air. You can promote wars. You can do all kinds of stuff.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for your direction. And any thoughts about the elections?
Well, the election part is always, and it's going to continue to be a farce. You know, now we got the Democrats not even wanting to vote for their own Democratic representative. Because people are realizing that this is a farce. You know, our time is being stolen, our effort, our attention, everything is being subverted, and people are realizing that now. Now we have no choice. We have the choice between a clown and a clown. So what do we do?
Hey, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark, and thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station KBOO. KBO.FM. I'm Cecil. We just listened to Mark, who gave some of his thoughts on economic systems. But in the meantime, we do have time for our next caller. And James? Let's hear from James. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for taking my call. I called because of the guy talking about economics. I've really looked into it quite a bit. Basically, if the means of production are in the hands of the state, that means that there's no divisions of power. There's no divisions of economic power. All political and economic power is in the hands of the state. If the state has the power to tax and regulate industry, that means that they have the power to transfer all the wealth from the people into the hands of the ruling class.
Okay.
Originally, the Constitution did not give the federal government the power to tax and regulate industry. That power was reserved to the people. The people kept that power to themselves at the community level. That means each community decides for itself who does business in their community.
So let me wait. You're giving me information that very difficult for me to process. Again, is there a source you can cite that can help people learn more about what you're saying, because we only have a few minutes, so that would be helpful.
As Secretary of State in 1792, George Washington asked Thomas Jefferson to write a brief on the constitutionality of a national bank. Read that. It is very, very enlightening.
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson on the constitutionality of the National Bank.
Okay. So I will look up that source, and I want to give you the opportunity to say, so where do we go from here? And also would like for you to comment on the uncommitted movement and their non-endorsement. What do you think about the presidential election?
Well, I consider myself, I'm a classical liberal. which means I'm a basically I'm a constitutional. I'm a strict constructionist constitutionalist because I see the Constitution as a contract, and should be interpreted through contract law. My interpretation is that both candidates are tools of the ruling class. That the ruling class completely controls this system, and that until the means of production are back in the hands of the people, that the people will not have a say in how their government is run.
So I'm asking you, yes or no, do you think that should vote in this election?
I'm voting Constitution Party.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, thank you for your call and your thoughts. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I give you an opportunity. We have some minutes left to give us a call. That was the last caller, Mark, who was reflecting on the statement from the Uncommitted National Movement. Mark is identifies as a strict constitutionalist. Say that three times fast. And he is voting for a third party. So the Uncommitted National Movement is a movement that began within the Democratic Party, urging a ceasefire, an anti-war movement within the Democratic Party. In their statement, they say that they cannot endorse Vice President Harris. They are opposed to the election of Donald Trump, and they urge people not to vote for third party candidates, especially in states where it may increase the chances of Donald Trump to win. And so they recognize that we live in an imperfect world, and that choices aren't always perfect. And as one caller mentioned to us, when she heard that people were saying we cannot vote for one candidate because they have not taken a clear enough stand to oppose the genocide in Palestine, this caller reminded us that there are other important issues on that we must consider when we vote, including reproductive choice and voting rights. And therefore, she thought that it was necessary to vote for the vice president. And we had one caller who called and talked about his choice in terms of being, he will vote for a third party. So people are changing, not changing, but people have different opinions. And reminds me of how important it is in these coming days, these coming weeks, to talk with your neighbors and your community, your families and your friends, to get understanding of what are concerns for one another and what it is that we need to continue to work for. I was moved by the uncommitted voters' analysis in their statement by how they committed themselves, or not to one person or the other, but also identify themselves with a movement within the National Party, which is always moving to make it more democratic, more inclusive. They write, our focus remains on building a broad anti-war coalition both inside and outside the Democratic Party. Pro-war forces like AIPAC may want to drive us out of the Democratic Party, but we're here to stay. Movement has long worked to rid the Democratic Party of hateful forces. Segregationists, anti-union, anti-choice, and anti-LGBTQ proponents, the NRA and the Big Oil, and we will work on the legacy to rid our party of AIPAC pro-war extremism. therefore identifying their movement with historic justice movement within that political party. And I would expand it to the struggles going on in that other major political party, to link what's happening today to things that were happening in the past, and to see the connection. So even as the uncommitted see the connection between their struggle for justice today with those who for workers' justice, for reproductive choices, for LGBTQ inclusion and acceptance, and for the creating a cleaner and safer world free from war and poverty. It is an ongoing struggle, and it isn't one that will be solved in one election. It's a lot of work to do, and you are doing it. We will continue our conversation in the future, but I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you so much for listening to More Talk Radio. Have a good day, and we will talk soon.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery.
Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore